Okay, thank you everyone for coming. I'd like just to thank Kleenex for helping me prepare today's shiur. I have a little cold, so if anybody can't hear me properly or it just comes a little slurred, please let me know and I'll try my best to speak clearly and loudly. Okay, so today we're going to try to blitz through the ABCs of the Dalet Minim, acquiring, binding, and choosing Dalet Minim. I did not prepare specific booklets with Ma'amar Kaimis because we're really going to try to cover a lot of information from the Mishnah Brura in various simonim of the Dalet Minim. We're going to actually go backwards and start with C, choosing, and then discuss the binding, putting it together, and then a little bit discuss the acquiring of the Dalet Minim. So, I just want to intro with, there are basic Kalalim, certain principles that exist within the halachas of Dalet Minim. We're going to reference them a couple of times, just to be everyone should be familiar with the words. The first of all, let's just start with the pasuk. The pasuk in Parshas Emor says, "Ulekachtem lochem bayom harishon." We should take on the first day of Sukkot, pre Eitz Hadar, a beautiful fruit, kapos tamarim, which is a branch from a tamar tree, anaf Eitz Avos, a tri-leafed branch, v'arvei nochal, and willows that grow by the brook, v'samachtam lefnei Hashem lokechem, we should rejoice before Hashem, shivas yom, for 7 days. So this is the pasuk. We're not going to go through all the gemaras which dash in this pasuk, but this is the basic pasuk we learn from here. We have to take the esrog, the lulav, the hadasim, and the aravos on the first day of Sukkot. The gemara explains that bizman shebeis hamikdash hayikayam, the mitzvah in the mikdash was all 7 days. Nowadays, the only mitzvah mid'oraisa is the first day, and then the second day here in Chutz Laaretz as well, basically. And the rest of the days of Yontif, it's a takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that we should be ready. Any minute the Beis HaMikdash will come back, Meher B'Yameinu, we shouldn't lose our regular taking of Luluv and Esrog every day. So therefore, we do the Luluv and Esrog the rest of the days of Sukkot nowadays, only Midrabanan. That's going to have a distinction in some of the halachos, where some halachos will be particularly more makbid on the first day because it's the araisa, and though certain leniencies will exist for other days because it's only midrabanan. Now, there's a very often used term in the halachos of Dalet Minim, and that's the halacha of hadar. It must be beautiful. And the Gemara explains, since the pasuk specifically refers to the esrog as a pre-eitz hadar, which means beautiful, it's splendorous fruit. So from there we learn out that all the Dalet Minim must be beautiful, and therefore we're going to have to actually go ahead and spend extra money, not just get an esrog, but get a beautiful esrog. Not just get regular hadasim, have to get beautiful hadasim, etc. Now, the psul hadar, what the Gemara or the Shulchan Aruch is going to call, if something is not kosher because it's lacking in hadar, that for us is going to be something which is pasul all 7 days. Even though we just said that after the first day of Yontif, or the second day here in Chutz Laaretz, it's only midrabanan, nonetheless, we paskin, it's a machlokes, but we paskin based on the Ramah, that the psul, this problem, if something is invalid because if it's not hadar, it's not beautiful, it's going to make the esrig or the hadas not fit all 7 days. There's another psul that comes up often, and that's called lekicha tama. That's the term of the Gemara, that you're lacking something in your taking. Your taking is not complete, it's not whole. And that means that you're missing a small mashahu of something, or the top leaf of the lulav, which we'll get to more in detail shortly, is slightly split. So there you're taking the lulav, but there's something slight deficiency in your taking, some slight flaw in what you're doing. So there, the first day is going to be more machmir, and the second day as well in Chutz Laaretz will be more stringent, and you have to have a complete taking. And the rest of days of Yontif, as we'll get the details later, some of these halachas will be more lax. And although it's always best to have the best way we could do the mitzvah, but it's still going to be kosher if we have a slight flaw, which we'll define shortly exactly what that is, in some of the Dalet Minim.
Chutz Laaretz, the two psulos and Yoraisa?
For simplicity's sake, let's make it like this. In Chutz Laaretz, the first 2 days are the same. That's one group. And then the rest of the days of Chol HaMoed, including Hashanah Rabbah, are Midrabanan. There is a slight difference between the first and second day, but for our discussion, it's basically going to be the same. So anytime I say the first day, it means the same for the second day here in Chutz Laaretz. Okay, but we have to just use that term first day because hopefully this year Sukkot, Be'ez Hashem, will only be celebrating one day of Sukkot in Eretz Yisrael, so let's just keep using that term. But if we're still in Chutz Laaretz, we'll be used to that. It's really the same thing as the second day. Okay, so we're going to first discuss the Lulav, then the Hadas, then the Arava, and then the Esrog. The reason why I'm going in that order is because that's the order of the Shulchan Aruch, so we'll try to follow that order. Now, again, another disclaimer, there are numerous halachas in regard to the Dal and Minim. I'm going to try to focus on just the, some, what I think, or I thought, or I looked through the different, you know, halachas that are the most applicable to the regular consumer. As Cy Sims used to say, an educated consumer is the best customer, so we have to know what is applicable to us when we get the Lulav and Esrog, what we're looking for. There are a lot of halachas which are nageya, which are applicable in the field, how to plant it, how to cultivate it. We're not going to discuss those, although they do come up in Shulchan Aruch at sometimes, but we're getting a finished product, so let's discuss those halachas. Okay, so let's start with the Lulav. When we get to the Lulav, as we all know, the most important part of the Lulav in most halachas is the middle leaf. That's the psak of the Ramah, that the middle leaf must be doubled. It's called the tiyumis. All the leaves of a lulav, which grows from a date palm tree, are doubled over. That's the way they grow. I don't have any visual aids right here, but we've all, Baruch Hashem, seen lulav, and we all know all the leaves of a lulav are doubled. The most important doubling of a leaf, according to the Ramah, is the middle leaf, and he would call that the tiyumis. Now, if the majority of that middle leaf is split, then the lulav is puzzle. It might be beautiful green, it might be nice and tall, which we'll get to how big the lulav has to be, but if the majority of that leaf, the middle leaf, is split, it's puzzle all days of Yontem, nothing to talk about. The Ramah writes, however, miu, that's if the majority is split. However, it says the Ramah, miu lechatchila, it's best case, mitzvah min ha-mufchar, the best way to do the mitzvah is nogen li to lulav, we take a lulav, shlo nechlak ha'ala ha'elyon klal, where the middle leaf is not split at all, ki yesh machmirin afilu benechlak kitzas, because there's some that are stringent even if it's a little bit split. Again, if it's more than 50, if it's 51% more or more split, it's puzzle.
What is it, the entire length of the lulav? We're talking about
the middle leaf. Now, yeah. If you look at a lulav, there's the spine of the lulav.
Right.
It's thicker in the middle. Then it kind of gets thinner, and it turns into, usually it's one leaf, the middle leaf. Well, that's what you have to isolate and focus on. If more than 50% of that leaf, till it hits the spine, which is usually about maybe halfway three quarters up the lulav or halfway up the lulav where it hits the spine, if the middle leaf up to the spine is more than half split, the lulav's going to be puzzle. The Ramah just told us now that lechatzchila, even though it sounds like anything less, if it's only 49% or less, it should be kosher. Lechatzchila, says the Ramah, we don't want it split at all. Now, why not? Says the Mishnah Berurah, it's very practical why we don't want it split at all. Because, as we'll discuss later, we all know we shake the lulav at various times. We make the bracha during halal, various customs. How often we shake it, but we're definitely shaking the lulav. And when we shake the lulav, it's not just a quick shudder. We have to actually get the leaves going into the rhythm. So if we want to get the leaves in the rhythm, if it's already split, what's going to happen if we keep shaking it day after day? It's going to continue to split more. Therefore, it says in Mishnah Berurah, practically, it's just not a good idea to take a lulav that's split even a little bit. Now, however, says the Mishnah Berurah, how much is allowed to be split and it's not puzzle even according to the Ramah? The Ramah said it shouldn't be split at all. Was Ramah dafka? Was he specific at all? Means not even the smallest iota. So, of course, this is a machlekes. The Mishnah Berurah says it's a machlekes taz and chaya adam. The taz says that as long as it's split less than a tefach, a hand's breadth, which is between 3 and 4 inches, if it's less than that amount, it's kasha lechatchila, it's mehudar, it's not even a problem according to the taz. According to the chaya adam, if it's split even more than a mashahu, it's a problem. Doesn't say exactly how much the mashahu is. The Mishnah Berurah concludes that it seems from the Bir Hagraf and the notes of the Gain on the Shulchan Aruch that we could be maker like the Taz. Therefore, according to the Mishnah Berurah, it comes out that you're allowed to take a lulav, even lechatchila, if it's split a little bit, as long as it's less than a tefa. Now again, like we said before, the reason why it's not so practical to get a lulav that's already started to be split is because as we're going to be shaking the 7 days of Yontif, it's going to continue to split more. And if it's going to be split more on the sixth day, more than, you know, let's say on the fourth or sixth day, it starts splitting more and you hit after the 51% mark, so you spent all that good money in the beginning of Yontif, you were yaitzi your lulav for the first 4 days, now hits the fifth or sixth day, you're losing out on the mitzvah, which is a chaval. So, therefore, many Paiskim bring down a practical piece of advice. Diane Fisher from the Badatz publicizes this often. Shlomo Zalman Orbach said this at Low, to take a little crazy glue or some type of glue and very carefully put it on the top of the lulav in order to keep it closed. It's not considered a chatzitza. It's not considered to be something intervening with the lulav. And according to the Diane Fisher from the Badatz and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, this is lechatchila, it's not a problem, you can do this, and it's kosher. So if you get a lulav and it's slightly split on top, as long as it's not a hemnik, which we'll define in a minute what a hemnik is, as long as it's a regular split, just a little bit open, put a little crazy glue on, maybe ask Rabbi Frank or someone who's malumid, who's used to dealing with lulavim, how to do it properly. You don't want to end up pouring a whole bottle of glue on top of the lulav, which is not practical. So just do this with great care, obviously, and you can therefore ensure that your lulav will stay stuck for the rest of Yontif, and you can shake away, and you won't have any problems of it continuing to split. Now, Rabbi List wanted to say something?
Yes, I wanted to say something.
Yes, I don't want to focus on that because it's going to take us into a whole other machlokes. I said the Mishnah Berurah says the reason why we have to be careful, Mishnah Berurah learns the reason for the Ramah to be machmir is because it shouldn't split more. Okay. That's the Mishnah Berurah's understanding. Now, there are other Achareim who understand the Ramah differently, but that's the general, we're going to go with the Mishnah Berurah.
The bottom line is, as well, you know, we're saying, with all the Durim and everything, the bottom line is, if it's less than 40-50% split,
it's kosher.
And it's kosher, and you'll see the
Yaitz of the mitzvah. It's more lachatzchila to be more closed. For the practical advice, shouldn't split more. And it is more mehudr if it's meaning within mehudr, it's not like it's mehudr or bust. Meaning you have different levels of hiddur. The more better it is, so that's you know, in regards to halacha, that you know, that sets it up to be more mehudr in halacha. Meaning if, so again, just to clarify, if it's more closed, it's more mehudr. If it's closed all the way, it's 100% mehudr. According to Abishai Mizama and Diane Fisher, if you seal it with glue, it's 100% mehudr. Now, yeah.
Even if we're talking about crazy glue,
sure.
Can you use that for your arabos and your hadassim as well to keep those leaves stuck on?
No, I don't think we'll see. Well, we'll get to that later. Let's just stay focused on lulav for a minute now.
Put your down.
Now, there is, sure.
If it was split a little bit and you glue it together, you made it mehudr.
It grew mehudr, and now if it just split a little bit from the shipping and handling and things like that, then if you glue it together, according to Diane Fisher and Shlomo Zalman, it's 100% fine.
So
however,
you just
put it back, like you know, you're back to square one, so to speak.
You prevented the hitter from
continuing to go, right. I heard from Rabbi Fershlita from Chicago, someone asked him, he was a lulav meicher, he sold lulavim, he wanted to pre-glue the lulavim in order that people won't have problems. You know, he'll have the best lulavim on the market. Right? I first told him it would be a mekach tais, you're not allowed to do that, because Lamai said this is a machlaikis ha-paiskim. Many paiskim do rely on this glue, and that's why I spoke it out. Many paiskim rely on it, but if you're going to trick the consumer into thinking that there's no glue, and you're not going to tell him, if you tell the consumer, it's one thing, but to go ahead and to glue all the lulavim in order that everyone should know your lulavim never open. The never opening lulav, like the no slip talus. I don't know how they do that, but the same thing. The never opening lulav, at first said that would be a mekach tais. Now, there's a certain type of split in a lulav called a hemnik. It's a big machlek is how to define it. For simplicity's sake, a hemnik is when it splits like a V or like a Y, where it comes to a point on top where it's not just that it's not connected. You know, you can have a leaf which is not connected, but you know they lay flat against each other. Just if you touch it, you'll see that they're separated. A hemnik is going to split like a V. If it's split like a V, even a mashahu on top, it's puzzle. So that we have to look for much more carefully, because a hemnik doesn't make a difference if it's not right. Even if it's only 1%, 2%, as long as it's a nicker, as long as it's recognizable to the naked eye. You don't have to take the diamond loop and look on top of love, but any time the loop is going to be split like a hemnik, and this takes practice to look at different lulav to see what defines a hemnik. Because sometimes you lie the lulav down flat on the table, you'll see the leaves will come back together. That might not be a hemnik. It has to be that the leaves on the middle leaf we're talking about specifically is going to split like a V formation. Even if it's a small split, that's a psul hemnik, and that's puzzle. Even if you glue it together afterwards, it's too late. You can't do that. The glue only helps for the split when it's lying flat against each other. Once it's split like a hemnik, it's going to be puzzle.
Hemnik is hey, mem, nun,
kuf. Hey, yud, mem, nun, yud, kuf. It's a Gemara. It's a word from the Paiskim. Hemnik. Okay. Now, there's another a common issue with lulavim, and in the Svarim, it's called kara, which is like this brownish stuff. I don't know what the fancy English word for it is. I'm sure there's some sophisticated word for it.
Husk.
Well, husk, or some brownish stuff that's stuck on your lulav. Now, the lulav grows naturally like this. If the brownish stuff is on the lulav, there's advantages and disadvantages. The advantage is it's not split because all the leaves are held together by the brown stuff. Disadvantage is you don't know if maybe really it is split. So what do? This is a machlekes ha-paiskim. The old minig in Yerushalayim, and this is the minig of many of the earlier paiskim, was that if the lulav has the kara on it, don't touch it. Just leave it alone, and we can assume everything is kosher. The only issue might be that if the whole lulav, all the leaves are stuck together with this brown stuff, not just a little bit, but all of them are stuck together, so it's really like glued shut, you're not going to be able to shake it properly by na'anuim when it comes time to shake the lulav. So then you could carefully, with some water, take away some of the brown stuff from the sides, but leave the middle brown stuff as is, in order that the lulav doesn't have any problems. Right? Green Matom is the minik here in St. Louis. This way we pass in here. Again, it's machlokes. This way we pass in here that the brown stuff on lulav, just don't touch it. As long as you can shake the lulav a little bit, and as long as it looks closed now at the brown stuff, the kara, leave the lulav as is, and it's kosher, and you could have a good yontif with that lulav. Now, just a general note of caution. Many people, because we just spoke a lot about the middle leaf, I've seen this most times, and I might have unfortunately been guilty of this myself. We're going to go check out the lulav. Maybe it's given to you, or sometimes they let you look through a little bit, and you want to be overzealous, and you want to make sure you're going to get the most sealed lulav. So you pick up the lulav, and you take it, and you start going like this on top, and checking it out, make sure the top is split. You're probably going to pass the lulav, or at least make it not mahoder, and then the seller is going to be very upset at you because you're messing up a lulav. It's not advisable to start touching the top of lulav like this. It's just you're going to split it. You don't, you know, it's very fragile on top. So take a lulav, figure out where the middle leaf is, and carefully from the sides try to determine if it's split or not. Again, lechatchila, we want to get the least split as possible. Right, you want to get as least split as possible for lechatchila, so it shouldn't have any problems later of splitting more. Just be careful when you're checking it that you're not the one who's passing all the town to love him because you're looking for the perfect lulav. Yeah. Yes, that's no problem. But, you know, you just need a minuscule amount of glue, so just maybe use it with, like, a Q-tip or something. You know, you really need just a drop. So you just don't want to have that glue oozing down your lulav. Just practical. You know, it looks like a kindergarten project. You know, your kid comes home, the glue's all over the place. That's not going to make your lulav look too beautiful. Okay, those are the basic halachas lulav I wanted to speak out. There are many other halachas of lulav. For example, there's a problem of a lulav hayavesh, if lulav dries out too much. That's not really going to happen if you have a fresh lulav from this year, unless you have your lulav in the car for a couple hours every day, which is not smart, so make sure you avoid that. Another issue of a lulav is nektam roshay. If the top gets cut off slightly, even a little bit, it's a problem. When you're going to get the lulav, it's not going to be a problem. As long as you handle it with care, you shouldn't have this problem at all over lulav. Another problem, which the players can discuss often, which we're not really going to focus on too much, is when there's a funny setup with the middle leaf. Like we said before, every leaf is double. If, let's say, the Siamese twin leaf is not fully even, one's a little more narrow, one's a little shorter. If you see a lulav like that, ask the Rav. It depends on the case. It's a lot of details. We're not going to discuss that case right now. Hopefully you'll get a regular lulav where the middle leaf is like a Siamese twin. The two leaves just equal up each other altogether. Okay, excellent. I wasn't going to bring that up, but there's something called a knippel lulav. It's a big machlekes ha-paiskim. A knippel lulav is when the top of lulav is slightly bent over. One thing I didn't mention, if the lulav is bent excessively, the shedra, the spine of lulav is too bent, that's a psul. That's not hadar, and that passes lulav. Now, you're not going to find those lulavim here when they come here. Could be if you go to an open shuk, you might see some funny shaped lulavim. But here we're getting, you know, finished, you know, good quality merchandise. You're not going to see this psul. But sometimes, there's something called a geknepel lulav, where it's slightly bent on top. Some chassidim prefer it. The Maram Mirutenberg from the Rishonim preferred it. The Rosh said it's puzzle. It's a machlokes Rishonim. Most people do not use that type of lulav. Some people have a specific minig to use that lulav. If you're not sure, then probably don't use it. If you have that minig, then continue to go with it.
So what was the reason why it was preferred? Is because it's much less likely to become split?
It's not going to split. Right. But then maybe it could be it's puzzle because it's a deformity in the lulav.
Right.
So let's not spend so much time with that, but that's the basic idea. Most lulav we're going to see here, I can imagine, are not going to be knippled, are not going to be bent over a little bit, and therefore you won't have this shaila. Okay. Right. Now, right. It's just fragile. Just eight to taiva. Right. You don't have to worry about necktie, but most of the time you don't have to worry about necktie unless you know that something happened. Meaning, just you can tell if it was snipped on top, because it comes to a point. So if there's no point on top of lulav, okay. Okay, it could be, you're right. Again, we're not dealing here with an open shuk, so we don't have some of the shilas that exist when you're going more to an open marketplace, because at the end of the day, the delivering here, or the shipping here, is good merchandise. Okay, hadasim. Let's discuss hadasim. As we know, we take three hadasim. As the Gemara darshened it from the pasuk, when we read the pasuk before, v'anaf eitz avos, those three words refer to hadasim. The Gemara makes a drasha that we require to take three hadasim. If we're stuck somewhere in Antarctica and you only have one, you get to the mitzvah. But any time the chatzil, we should have hadasim. We should always have three. Now, Yeah, that's the Gemara Darshan's it from. Now, the most important halacha of hadasim is that the hadasim have to be mishulush. Mishulush means they have to be triple leafed. Now, that opposed to what the Gemara calls a hadas shaita, a foolish hadas, loosely translated. What that means is as follows. You have the hadas, it's a beautiful myrtle branch, and as we know, they're all three leaves by each section of the hadas. Now, when you look at the hadas at a regular length away from your eye, not necessarily scrutinizing it right under your nose, you have to be able to determine, the Poskim explain, that all three hadasim have an equal space, basically have the same area where they come out of the same area. Now, there's three separate stems. Each leaf has a separate stem. It can't be that, say, two are like this, which I'm my best to demonstrate this, and one is like this, slightly above it. That's called a hadas shaita, or of course, if it's like this, we're totally not aligned. As long as there's some tzad hashava, as long as there's some equal part where all three hadasim, the roots of all the leaves, the stem of the leaves, could match up at some level, that's considered a kosher hadas. Now, there are some people that can sit, I remember seeing this in Eretz Yisrael and also in Lakewood, where they have open buckets of hadasim. People sit for hours in scrutinizing hadasim. It's very, very, very uncommon, the Poskim write, to have a hadas where the whole thing, now the minimum share, I didn't say, of a hadas is three tefachim, which is between 10 and 12 inches. Let's just say, for argument's sake, the shear of a hadas is 12 inches. It's very uncommon that the whole 12 inches of a hadas is going to be completely mishulosh, that every single part of it is going to have that, three leaves that are coming out of basically the same area. Often, you're only going to have rive of the hadas in mishulosh, and that's what we have to use. If you are, if you have a way of manufacturing hadasim, I don't mean it in a factory, I mean in a way, you know how to grow them properly and you know how to somehow make a perfect breed, that's great. I'm just saying practically, it's very not common you're going to find the hadas, which is kulay mishulosh. Now, so often we're going to rely on roiv, which we'll get to more in a minute. However, like I said before, the hadasim are three tefachim. That's the minimum shear, or really bidyevet, 2.5 tefachim. Often though, our hadasim are going to become larger than three tefachim. You get the hadasim in the package, it might be 4 or 4.5 tefachim. It might be 15, 16, 17 inches long. Now, that works for our benefit and sometimes disadvantage. I'll say the benefit first. The benefit is, let's say you have a hadas which is 16 inches. So it's a whole tefach longer. It's 4 tefachim. So you need rive of 3 tefachim. So let's say 1.5 tefachim. Or let's just say, for argument's sake, you need 6 to 7 inches of mishulosh. So if you're dealing with 16-inch hadas, pretend this is 16 inches, all you have to have on this whole hadas of 16 inches roughly is 6 to 7 inches of mishulosh. It doesn't have to be in order. It could be over the whole hadas, because we're going with roiv, as long as you have the majority of the hadas, of the shear of required for hadas, is mishulosh, you're going to be yaitzah. So again, let's say you have a 16-inch hadas, which is maybe around the shear that they'll probably send it in. It's more than 3 tefachim. So as long as you have between 6 to 7 inches spaced out throughout the whole hadas, that's all you need for to have rive.
It's mid-story from different
places. Right, you can have the bottom, you can have, say, 3 inches on the bottom, right. 2 inches in the middle, and 3 inches on top. That'll get you, 8 inches of mishulosh. Now, the more you have a majority of mishulosh, the better. And the reason is as follows. They have to be mishulosh, we said, they have to be tri-leaved, the hadasim. If you're only having rive, what's often going to happen over sukkahs is that some of the leaves are going to fall off. Maybe if you stoop it into that lulav holder too strongly, or you take them out often to put them in water, which we'll discuss later, to keep them fresh, you're often going to lose some leaves over sukkahs. That's just a common occurrence. That's part of the game. Now, it's okay as long as you still have rive mishulosh. But if you only started in the beginning of sukkahs with 60% of your hadas being mishulosh, let's say for argument's sake, so you have to be careful that by the third or fourth day of Sukkot, when that comes around, you still have at least 51% of it mishulosh. If, whatever, let's just say 10 leaves fell out off sporadically over your hadasim on each branch we're talking about. You have 3 hadasim branches. Each one has to have, this is not altogether roiv mishulosh, each branch independently has to be the majority of mishulosh. So if you started, for argument's sake, on hadas branch number 1, and only 60% of it was mishulosh, and from that hadas branch, some of the mishulosh leaves fell off over second, third, or fourth day of yontif. Someone banged into you while you're going around for Hashanis, or you shook it really hard, or your kids took it. Whatever happened, it's just going to be common that leaves are going to fall off. You just have to check. It doesn't take a long time just to make sure that you still have Rive of the Hadas Meshulash throughout the whole Sukkot. Otherwise, you spent all that money and you might only have the mitzvah for 1 or 2 days of Yontif, and unfortunately, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah on the rest of Yontif. Possibly. So,
each of the three.
Now, B'di'eved, I want to save everybody here, I want to make everybody have problems. B'di'eved, as long as one of the Hadassim is still Rive Meshulash, you're going to be yaitz to the mitzvah. But L'chatchila, we want to have at least, we want all three of the Hadassim to still be Rive Meshulash throughout Sukkot. So if they're going to fall off, or if you didn't keep your hadassim moist every day, they're going to dry up and fall off. Or they're going to get wilted. And wilted is also a problem. It's as if it's already gone. It's yavesh. If it starts losing its color or the stem dries out, again, if you can leave your hadassim lulav in the car, you're just it's not a good idea. It's going to dry out very quickly, even if it's cool outside over Sukkot, which hopefully will be nice weather. But still, it's going to just, the car gets hot. It's just not a smart idea. Again, so the most important part of hadassim is meshulash. That's the main issue. You got to check that, even though we get the prepackaged hadassim, which usually has a heksh on it, which is very important and very good, but often through the shipping and handling, or if it wasn't refrigerated properly while it's being shipped, you're gonna have to ensure that at least drive of it is meshulash by the time you get it. Another just piece of practical advice, I see people have this issue all the time. You're gonna shtup the hadassim into the holder. Make sure you don't shake off the leaves, because if you start off with a good hadas and then you didn't stretch out the holder before you put the hadassim in, it's just a tight fit. You're going to shtup them all in at the same time, all the three, the whole bundle of hadassim like this. It just, metzius is, you're going to lose leaves. So put one in at a time, and you'll be practically, you have all your leaves intact, hopefully. Okay. What else do I want to say about hadassim?
So it's good to get a wide one.
It's good to get a wide one, as much as you can. If it's not so wide, you could just squash it down a little bit, widen it.
Accordion
it, right. Just squish a little before you put in so that the holder is just more wider, because often they've been pressed together by shipping. Just eitz taiva to fit it in. Now, some people don't use those holders. That's fine. It's the same issue, just when you're holding the hadassim, if you tie them on directly to lulav, the same idea. Just don't be careful when you're handling it, that you're not losing out on the shear of meshulash. So we discussed by hadassim the idea of it has to be meshulash. That's the most important basic halacha of hadassim, and also to be careful with the leaves falling off from the hadassim. And the idea also, if it gets dried up, it's also going to be a problem. It's as if it's falling off, if it's getting wilted. I guess, okay, good question. I guess if you put it in properly, if you didn't, again, it's a question of common sense, which sometimes is not always common, but just thinking about it, if you're going to stop it in, so even though a minute ago it looked like it was meshulash, if you're going to stop it in, you're probably going to lose the meshulash kite. It's just not going to be tri-leaved anymore. So, chacham ein of bereishai, to put it in carefully into the kaishikal, and you'll have all the hadassim intact. Okay, let's move on to aravas. Aravas are not so sophisticated in their halachas, but there are three basic halachas we have to know that determines the kashrus of the aravas. Number one is that the leaves of the aravas, there are many types of willow trees. We can get into all types of, the botanists can discuss all different varieties of the tree. We're not going to discuss that. The basic idea is that the leaves that are off the stem have to be long and narrow. They can't be rounded or short and fat. They got to be long and narrow leaves. Number two is that the edges of the leaves have to be smooth. It can't be like jagged or saw-like. That's not a real arava. And number three is that the stem can't be a white-stemmed arava. If it's white-stemmed, it's the wrong breed. It's preferably supposed to be red-stemmed, but often it doesn't turn red yet. It's still brownish or might even still be green. It's not fully ripened yet. That's okay. As long as it's not coming from a breed of aravas, which is white-stemmed, which is puzzle. Now, all these three halachos are ma'akev in aravas. Again, the leaves have to be long and narrow. It can't be jagged or sword-like edges. It has to be smooth around the leaf. And number three is that the stem cannot be white. It has to be reddish, brownish color, or even if it's still green, as long as that's coming from a place where the aravas are of a good breed. Now, after we establish that the aravas is kosher, we got all these qualifications down, which usually when you get in the aravas, it's not a problem. Again, we're not buying here from an open market. We're getting here a closed package, so to speak, so we know it's coming, that it's kosher aravas. You have to make sure the minimum shear of the arava, the stem, not the leaves, the stem itself, which is, I forgot to speak about hadassim also. When we say the shear for hadassim and aravas is 3 tefachim, it's the stem, not the leaves. So the stem itself has to be 3 tefachim. The leaves often go on top of the hadas or the arava. They grow beyond. So the stem itself is what has to be 3 tvachim, which is again between 10 and 12 inches. That's the minimum shear. Now, if roiv of the leaves fall off the arava, or they get wilted and dried off, or completely black, that means they're dead leaves. If roiv, more than 51%, that happens too, the leaves fall off or they get dried up, the arava is pasul. Anything less than roiv, the arava is still kosher. 49% is still is dried up. The 49% of leaves fell off, or you know, as long as you have 51% or more, that's kosher leaves. The arava is still kosher. However, the Mishnah Berurah writes, if aravas are easily available, and often they are, it's the easiest one of the dalminim to grow. Often you can grow aravas locally, or even if they're not local here in St. Louis, they're not coming from Eretz Yisrael, they're not coming from the desert where the lavim are coming from. They're coming from, you know, local places. Muncie grows a lot of aravas, or even in Brooklyn people grow aravas. I think St. Louis, some people have their own aravas bushes also. The Mishnah Berurah writes that although it's kosher, even if only roiv of the aravas is left intact, if it's possible to get more than roiv, if it's possible to get the whole aravas to be intact, that's lechatchila, and we should try to have aravas. Some people change aravas every day. You don't necessarily have to, as long as you're keeping them fresh. Now, one of the most important halachas of the arava after the shear and after you determine that's a kosher breed is the top of the arava. The top of the arava, if it's nektam, if it's cut off, which is sometimes hard to determine that, is pasul. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Aravas grow with a leaf on top, which on the halacha is called the lavluv. The Bali Dikduk are very perturbed where that word comes from. I don't know either where it comes from, but that's what it's called in the Sfarim, the lavluv. The lavluv is the top leaf where it protrudes out of the stem. It's a singular leaf. It just comes straight up. And if you have an arava which has that leaf top, then you can be 100% sure that the arava was not trimmed on top. Sometimes you get aravas with that, so then you're good to go. Often aravas don't come with that, so it just takes try to look carefully at the top of the arava and try to determine if the stem was cut on top. If the leaves are just slightly cut on top, that's not a problem. As long as you have most of the leaf there, that's not an issue. But if the stem is even cut a little bit on the arava, that's going to be puzzle. Okay, that's basically it for the aravas. Now
what
let's
about
get
from the bottom. It's not a problem.
No problem. If you have a very long arava, you can snip off the bottom, and that's going to be okay.
At some point, like let's say you have your own arava, but you cut it last year.
Right.
I mean, it's the same. It's cut, but it doesn't look.
Right, because it's regenerated. Right. And even will regrow a lavlum in such a case. Right. And it'll regrow that leaf on top.
When does it become ice cut and then?
Well, I don't know exactly how many months that'll take. I don't know. But I mean, let's say you cut off this year and you come back again next year. I'm pretty sure, without doing a proper study, that wouldn't be a problem. We regenerate enough that it'll be considered fresh. Right, right, yeah. I don't know. It could be a certain amount of time. I don't know exactly how to determine that. But I'm assuming for a year, that's not using aravas during Pesach. So unless you're burning them by the chametz, but that's usually the ones that are on top of the yarn, you're not taking from your own bush. Okay.
So here in St. Louis, they're all imported.
No. I don't know where they all come from. I don't know.
Most of them are imported, but there are people who have their own bushes.
Is there a tzad to say, well, it's still mechuber, that it wouldn't be nachtam no matter what?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
In other words, if you went ahead and you were pruning your arava bush, and then you went ahead and cut off a certain shear for sukkah,
let's just make an easy case. If you prune your arava bush 2 weeks before sukkah, then you cut them a week later, for sukkah, that would be a problem. Right. You get technical details. How many months? I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay. Let's now discuss the Esrig. The Esrig, as we know, has the most myriad of halachas, numerous halachas that I'll cover, that discuss the psulim of the Esrig. I'm going to try to discuss some of the basic ones, which again are applicable to us here, meaning the big shiloh always Esrig is its yichus. We know yichus is a big thing when it comes to our Jewish genealogy, which is very important, especially by Hasidim. Esrig also is very, very important, it's yichus, but we're here dealing with we're coming after the fact. We're getting an Esrig with the Hechsher, whether it's the Badatz from Eretz Yisrael, whether it's a Chazoin-ish breed of an Esrig, which we can discuss at a different time, where all these things come from. But this is very important. You cannot just go to Trader Joe's or Whole Foods and buy an Esrig. You are 99.9% not be yotz to the mitzvah if you buy an Esrig. They're probably 100% because it's going to be grafted. Any non-Esrog grower, anybody who just grows citrus fruits, and they might grow Etrogs, for whatever reason they might sell it for, they're going to graft it with a lemon tree, and the grafted Esrig is possible, 100%, nothing to talk about. So you must buy an Esrig with a Hechsher on it, otherwise it's 100% not kosher.
This year all the more so because of Shemitah.
Shemitah, right, that's another issue, or Orla, if the tree is within the first 3 years, it's also an issue. We're not going to discuss those halachas, we're only getting a Esrigim here with Hechsherim on it. Step two, spots on an Esrig. So here we go. Okay, let's say like this. Let's say this is my Esrig, but we'll try my best to be a little more creative. So as we know, the Esrig on the bottom is a little wider. Esrog on the bottom is a little wider, and on top it narrows up until it gets to the pitum. So let's just imagine it's even a little more narrow. The most important part of the esrog, when you're looking at the esrog, step one, is look at the area called the chaitim. The chaitim, which literally translates as the nose of the esrog, for which the machlokes rishonim how to determine where that is. We pass it like the Ran, the Shulchan Aruch goes, that it's going to start from where the slope starts going in and starts getting more narrow. That's called the chaitim. So let's just say, for example, roughly on this cup, somewhere over here, around over here, and then upward till it gets to the pitim is called the chaitim. You look at the esrog, the first area you look at is the chaitim. That's the most important, Rashi says, because that's the area you see first when you're holding the esrog. Now, the way to properly examine the esrog, Paiskim say, is first look at it like this. The regular way you're going to hold it when you're shaking lulav and esrog, not under your nose at first. First hold it over here at a regular distance, about an arm's length away from the eye, the way you're going to hold it when you're doing the mitzvah. Slowly turn it around and look for some slight discoloration. Let's give a case where you have a yellow esrog, the most common color of an esrog. There's no shilas, you have a yellow esrog. You're going to start looking at the esrog, and you're going to see a spot. Some slight discoloration. First question is, if hopefully you're not colorblind, you're able to determine what colors you're looking at, you have to determine what color it is. If it's black or pure white like a white shirt or like white of an egg, or it's dark green, that's what's going to be puzzle. Now, that's the formula. However, often if it's a black dot, there's ways to remedy it. But we'll get to that in a minute. But when you look at the top of the esrog, if it's a black dot, white, pure white, like not beige, white means like white, like a white shirt, like the white of an egg, real white, or dark green, it's puzzle. Now, that it continues all the way up to the pitum, if there is a pitum, and even on the stem of the pitum, and up to where the shishanta, where like the little bulb is on top of the pitum, not the bulb itself, but the stem that goes up to the bulb, any black, pure white, or green is going to be a problem. Now, after you determine that hopefully the esrog is clean, or you're not sure, you can bring a little closer to your eyes, get a better look. If it's black, pure black, not brown, and sometimes, if you're nervous to do it yourself, you can ask Rabbi Frank or somebody else who's used to dealing with esrog, you can take a little matchstick, or like a Q-tip might not be enough, or like a toothpick or something, but very carefully touch the little dot, the black dot. If you can get it off, you're okay. Now, one second, before you try this at home, you got to be very careful not to pierce the esrog, because as follows. If you pierce the esrog a little bit, it's not necessarily a problem, because you didn't make the esrog chaser, you didn't make it lacking in something, it's not taking away, but what's going to happen is it's going to secrete some of its juices, some of the acidic juices, and then in a day or two, you're going to end up with a splotch on your esrog. So, you're trying very hard to take off the little black dot, if it's possible. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Very carefully. If you're able to take it off, and it's a taiva quickly, is to just wash it under cold water so that if any acid comes off, it's going to quickly won't get stuck on the skin of the esrog, so you won't have any problems later of discoloration on the esrog. If the esrog doesn't have black or pure white or green, it just has a brown spot or reddish, then it's kosher still, but it takes away it takes away from the level of hiddur. It's not a Rolls Royce esrog. Okay? Now, let's say you have one brown spot. Okay, so you got a Cadillac. You didn't get the Rolls Royce esrog. It's okay. If, though, you're going to have it in three places throughout the circumference of the chaitim, let's say you have two on one side and one on the other side, that's also going to be puzzle. That's going to be called menumer. It's spotted. Because this way, what happens is, any way you turn it, there's going to be spots visible, and that puzzles the esrog. So even if it's not black, white, or green, even if it's brown or reddish or off-white color, if it's you have many of those spots on top of the esrog, it's also going to puzzle it just because it looks spotted and it doesn't look pleasant to the eye. That's the halacha.
And this applies to every day of Yom Kippur?
This applies to every day. Now, if you start off beginning of Sukkot without any black dots, you're not going to have black dots that are going to come on that are going to puzzle. Maybe you get a little dust on the esrog, something. Black dots are not going to grow on the esrog. They come from bugs or other things that come onto the esrog while it's growing or while it's being cultivated. It's not going to happen while sitting in a box in your living room. So that's not an issue. We'll get to something else that might happen in a minute during Sukkot. Another thing which is common on an esrog is what's called in Yiddish bletloch. That's like leaf marks or thorn marks that come from an esrog. Now, as long as the bletloch don't protrude into the esrog, so it's not a problem of chaser, nothing is lacking from the body of the esrog, it's kosher, but it lowers again the Ramah, the level of the hiddur of the esrog. But it's very uncommon to find an esrog doesn't have any blatlach at all. It's very common that you'll have at least one or two blatlach on the esrog. If you could get an esrog that doesn't have the blatlach on top, right now all we've been discussing, keep in mind, I'm sorry, I'm going to emphasize this again, was the top, the chaitim of the esrog. We'll get to the bottom part of the esrog in a minute. If you can get an esrog without any blatlach on top, that's fantastic. Very common, very often though, you can have at least one bletel, even if it's very small on top, as long as it doesn't protrude, it's not indentation into the esrog, it's kosher, again, but it's not going to be the necessarily Rolls Royce, but again, it's very hard. I don't have a color picture of it, I'm sorry. You're going to see it. Look at any esrog, you're going to see it's not black, it's like a beigeish color. It's a natural, it goes naturally with the skin. If it's a greener esrog, if it's not fully yellow yet, it might be easier to see it. You'll see any esrog. It's not indentation. If it's indentation, it might be more problem. It's a surface color. It looks like a leaf covered it a little bit while it was growing, or a thorn might have been touching it but not protruding it while it was growing. Something like that, where a natural blemish came on it while it was growing. It's a beigeish color, but esrog is never flat. It's always a bumpy texture, right? But it does not indent it in. Because if it's going to be indented in, then you're running into a problem now that the esrog might be a problem of chaser, which we don't have the time to discuss so many details of that. Now you're not really hopefully going to find that in our esrogim because, again, we're getting merchandise that's already been selected and organized properly. It's not an open market. So hopefully you're not going to have any problems of chaser. But bletlach is a very common issue. It's a blemish on the esrog. It's a beige color, and it doesn't pass to the esrog. It just lowers it one level of hiddur. Let's just try to quickly finish up. The rest of the esrog under the chaitim, the regular wide part of the esrog, the bottom is called the ukitz. That's the stem. You must have the ukitz there. If the ukitz fell out, it's a problem. You're not going to get any esrog here that doesn't have the ukitz, unless something happens and got really banged. So, fine. That's not a problem. We'll get to the pitamim and discuss the pitamim yet. But the bottom part of the esrog, it's a problem, yeah. It's not going to fall out. It's stuck in unless someone yanks it or you slam it down. Right. It could happen, but that's why I mentioned it, but it's not a common problem. The bottom part of the esrog, the body of the esrog, not the chaitim, there are very often different spots and das on it. It's not a problem unless it's going to be menumer, unless it's going to be spotted, meaning any way you look at the esrog, it's three or more spots along the esrog, not the bletlach, but the different colored spots in the esrog. So if this way, any way you turn, you're going to see spots. That's a menumer esrog, and it's going to be a problem.
Well, three isn't that many.
It's not that many, but it has, again, the spots have to be discernible. But at an arm's length vision, if you can only see them like this, that doesn't pass to the esrog. Might not be the most mahudr, but doesn't pass to the esrog. So at an arm's length, it's not so common that you can get an esrog here in a box that's going to have this issue. Let's quickly.
Sure that we're talking about as far as the
as long as it's recognizable at arm's length, and it's you have three, so you have any way you turn, you're going to see it. The way I'm saying three because I'm imagining say two, one, two, and then three. So it's kind of around the whole circumference of the esrog, so any way you turn, it's going to be visible. But if you have three only in one spot, as long as it's visible. Let's quickly discuss the pitim. We got to finish up. As we all know, if the pitim falls off on, so if you have an esrog with the pitim, you bought the pitim, you saw the pitim on, falls off on Sukkos, it's a big problem. That's why some people don't want to have an esrog with a pitim. We'll get to that in a minute. But there's really two parts of the pitim. There's the stem of the pitim and the bud, the shashanta, the little bulb on top of it. If just the bulb falls off, you're usually pretty good because that stem is what's the ma'akev on the pitim. If you have just the top little ball falls off, and as long as you have part of the stem, it's kosher after the first day. The first day it's going to be puzzle, but after that it's going to be kosher for the rest of Yontif. We don't have time to get in really right now. There's a lot of details of how you can tell if a pitim fell off before it grew or after it grew. Hopefully if you're getting a esrog with a hechsher on it and they tell you it grew without a pitim, or the pitim fell off at an early stage and it's covered over now with a scab-like on top, then you don't have to worry about it. If there's a suffix when the pitim fell off, meaning you got it without a pitim and it looks like the pitim fell off in early stages of growth, then the Sharatzin is Mekel and says you don't have to worry, you don't have to be concerned the pitim fell off later. Not everybody agrees with the Mishnah Berurah, but the Pesach of the Mishnah Berurah is if you cannot determine when the pitim fell off, again, this is not because you see a pitim now, you know, it's really you can't tell, then the Mishnah Berurah is Mekel.
Crazy glue doesn't help.
Not help over here. Okay, we got to quickly finish up. I just wanted to point out a couple of halachas in the binding. We only really got through C, we didn't get back to B and A, so let's just try to zip it. We got binding. We have to, the halacha is zekeh and aveo, the girl learns from here, we have to bind the lulav, hadassim, and aravas together. Just a couple halachas that sometimes people don't realize. You spend all the money, you got a beautiful lulav, esrig, hadas, and rabbis. You spend all that money, everything's kosher. You might mess it up when you bind it, as follows. You might not be able to mitzvah properly. When you're holding the lulav, the shedra, the spine of the lulav, not the back of the lulav, the spine, the green spine should be facing you. You should be seeing that spine when it's in the lulav holder. That's step one. Step two is that the three hadasim are on the right, the two hadasim are on the left. Even for lefties, that's the way it is. The aravos are on the left, the hadasim on the right. Again, we spoke about before, being careful how you put it in. Now, how many rings do you need? The halach is you're supposed to have a kesher shel kayama, a real knot that binds together the three minim, the lulav, hadasim, and aravos. We're yaitza that with those people who use the kishikol, the handle, the holder on the bottom. Most people have that minig. That's considered kesher shel kayama. Now, so you put the lulav in the middle, again, carefully, and the hadasim and aravos carefully in there. Many people will take another lulav leaf and wrap it around just to bind it together tightly. On the lulav itself, there's various minhagim. Some people have another two rings, some people have three, some people have five. Each person can follow his minig. However many you're going to put on the lulav itself, you must be very careful not to put them too high up. Because like we said before, the halacha is when you shake the lulav, the leaves actually have to shake. Therefore, the Mishnah asks, the top tefach of the lulav should be without any rings. Many times, unfortunately, you see people that put the rings and they just put them all the way up and they're up towards the top. I think it's good, this way they'll keep the lulav tight. It might be good in theory, but it's not good in halacha because you can't shake the leaves. The top tefach of the lulav must be totally exposed without any rings. Furthermore, when you're holding it in the holder shouldn't be too far up. Sometimes some people put it like halfway up the lulav, that's also a problem. The lulav, the top tefach of that, of your lulav, has to be after the hadasim end. So if you're going to put the holder up too high, you're going to have the hadasim basically coming up to the same height as the lulav. That's a no-no. It must be lower down. The top lulav, top tefach of lulav must be totally by itself. The hadasim, api kabbalah, we pass like this, must be slightly higher than the aravos. So the lulav in the middle, lulav is the highest, hadasim a little bit higher, the aravos a little bit lower. Okay, lulav the highest, then hadasim, then aravos. Another halacha is that when you're holding it, be careful that you're actually holding the hadasim and the aravos in the holder. Some people just hold it from the bottom, they kind of like, you know, like this on the bottom of their lulav, they're not holding the hadasim and the aravos, they're only holding the lulav, that's a problem. You got to hold it, the whole thing. Now, you don't want to squeeze it too tight because you just don't want to lose all the leaves, but you got to make sure you're holding the hadasim, ravas, and the lulav. Another halacha which some people are not familiar with, that Mechaber Shulchan Aruch passes like this, and it's brought down la halacha, that on Hashanah Rabbah we remove the rings from the lulav. We leave the lulav in the kishikol, in the holder on the bottom, but the leaves that are actually on the lulav, the two or three, or how many you have on lulav, are removed. I once had discussed that with Rav Avram Shor and Hashanah Rabbah. I don't know where he got this minig from, but his minig was he only removed the rings after Halal before the Hashanahs. I'm not sure. I'm sure he had a chassidish source for that. Wherever you're going to remove it, but they must remove the Hashanah Rabbah either before you make the bracha on lulav or after Halal before Hashanahs. Okay, we'll have to stop here. Okay, we'll have to stop. It's time.
You have to remove the rings.
Hashanah Rabbah. Okay, thank you very much. And.